What turns on a killer is the suffering and death of another human being. And as his determination builds to take another life, he plans in obsessive detail what props he'll bring, what knots he'll tie. Let me ask you guys something. What turns you on?
Welcome to Canvas and Crime, your ultimate destination for true crime and horror merchandise. Meet Elizabeth, the creative force behind canvasandcrime.com. She combined her passion for painting with her fascination for true crime and horror, giving birth to this unique shop.
You're looking for an intelligent white male, 20 to 30 years old, socially functional.
Are you a fan of serial killer memorabilia? You're in luck. Canvas and Crime has an incredible selection, from iconic mugs featuring notorious figures like Ted Bundy and the Zodiac Killer, to killer shot glass sets that showcase your favorite serial killers.
All I know to do is change your locks, tighten up your security, and pray.
But that's not all. You can also find custom prints of your most loved serial killer, adding a personal touch to your collection. For the most entertaining serial killer merchandise, look no further than canvasandcrime.com. Support a small business and dive into the chilling fun. Shop today, and don't forget to follow Canvas and Crime on YouTube as well.
Hey everyone, it's Albert Parker here. I'm the host of the new Hollywood Hustle podcast, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network. Welcome to the show where we stop gawking at red carpets and start following the money. We dive deep into the financial secrets that keep Hollywood thriving. Not gossip, not just celebrity dirt, real structures, real cash flows, the corporate chess moves that decide what gets greenlit and what gets buried. Who actually owns Hollywood? Who makes the real money? And who's just along for the ride? So what makes Hollywood hustle stand out? We don't just report headlines, we unpack them. Now, how do you listen? Hollywood Hustle Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For ad-free episodes, be sure to subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.
You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Hi, I'm Doug Jones, but you are listening to the Pixie Dust Twins podcast.
All it takes is faith and trust. Oh, and something I forgot. Dust. Just a little bit of pixie dust.
I only hope that we never lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a mouse.
To live. To live will be an awfully big adventure.
Some imagination, huh?
Good day, mate.
I'm Mary Kate.
And I'm Ashley.
Samantha?
I don't even know it's Samantha.
Danny boy, where are you?
Hi ho, Kermit the Frog here, and welcome to Muppet Vision 3D.
I may be dead, but I'm still pretty.
Oh, come on, Gar. We're here. Happiest place on earth.
Shall we begin?
Welcome, Pixie Dusters. We're your favorite hosts. I'm Sammy.
And I'm Ashley. Welcome to the Pixie Dust Twins podcast featuring Dawn.
Hi, fellas.
Oh, no.
Ugh,
oh, no.
I need another drink of my coffee. We're produced by Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Check out our social media. We've got Instagram, Facebook, YouTube Shorts, and TikTok. Oh, boy.
Let's see. And www.limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com. I forgot to do that last week.
Yeah, go to the website too. Check it out.
Yep. Oh, goodness. Dan,
what?
Never mind.
What?
Where do you get these ideas?
A lot of times I just kind of wait till we're actually hitting record and just do whatever my brain feels is right.
No kidding.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also watch a lot of goofy people, so I'm like, oh, I could do what this guy does or what this person does. Mm.
Makes sense.
Mm. All right. That does make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My brain's like popcorn.
So today is our third episode of Books to Media, but before they do that, you know, I like to talk about either some sort of Disney news or something little Disney related fun. And I have a little Disney related fun. Mm-hmm. So I've started following this, these creators called Magic Makes Memories. They're a married couple. They do have a lot of like top five or worst five lists.
I know who they are. Yeah.
And have you, dang it. Do you watch them too?
Yeah.
So I was going to try to, I was going to see if you knew the, if you were, it could quiz you on one of them, but if you know it,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've seen a bunch of their videos, so I don't know.
Have you seen the one about the nostalgia, the most, what is it? The top five ride quotes that spark nostalgia.
No, I don't think I've seen that one.
Beautiful. Dan, you can try this too.
Sure.
So I want to see what you guys' guesses are. So they're the top five quotes that spark nostalgia at Disney World. I will give you a hint that none of them are in Hollywood Studios or Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
All are Magic Kingdom, Epcot, or outside of it.
That makes sense. Okay.
What's your first guess?
Like you say quotes, like ride quotes and stuff?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like that live rent-free in our heads.
Okay.
Oh, we're just coming up with them. I thought you were going to say something and we guess where it's from.
No, you have to guess what you think the top five are.
Okay. So the ride.
I imagine the monorail one is up there.
Can either of you say it? I can never say the full thing.
Please stand clear of the doors.
Doors, por favor. De las puertas.
Yes, that is actually number one. Okay. That is the number one quote by Disney people.
Right.
It's
on t-shirts.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's...
It is on t-shirts.
I can't imagine that Thank the Phoenicians isn't somewhere on the list. Maybe it's not, but okay.
No, it is. Number three. Okay. If you were able to read this, thank the Phoenicians.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you know your ABCs, thank the Phoenicians. Mm-hmm.
That's a big...
That's the only one. That's the
Epcot
only one,
right? Epcot. Yeah, that's the only one I could think of that would have made sense from Epcot, since you hinted which parks were included. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there a Haunted Mansion?
Well, I didn't want this to go on for 20 minutes.
Well, is there a Haunted Mansion?
Is their news. Their news, ours. Remember that.
What is that from? What?
That's from Spaceship Earth, like the very end of it, where they're in space and they're like talking about like exchanging information. I'm just going through my like mental Rolodex of like.
No, say the line again. I didn't hear what you said.
It's not even like it's a portion of a monologue. I just remember this one line that says, "Our news is their news ours. We share information."
That is old.
How long has that been?
God. That is like two monologues ago.
Yeah,
that
I don't think that's there anymore. No. No.
That's where my mind's going. My mind's going to back to the old days of guy. The freaking Jeremy Irons was narrating it.
Uh-huh.
It was narrated by Scott. I didn't know that was Jeremy Irons until like I looked it up recently.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That's been a minute.
Okay, so Sammy, you were on the right track.
Yeah, I don't know if it'd be we've
from
got
Haunted Mansion. Do you think would be
999 Happy Haunts? There's room for 1,000.
Nope, not that one. Think towards the beginning.
Is the room stretching, or is it just your imagination?
Yeah, I was gonna say the stretching room must be no, not the stretching room. What are they quoting from the Haunted Mansion?
Very beginning of the stretching room.
Is it the dead bodies?
Or not the stretching room. The room. The very first room. What is the very first thing he says?
Your ghost host. I'm your host. Your ghost. I don't know.
Welcome, foolish mortals.
Yeah.
To the haunted mansion.
I'm your host. Literally the your first ghost line. Host. Why are people quoting that? I mean, I guess you.
I don't know, but apparently it lives rent free. Okay.
That wouldn't be my choice.
The foolish mortals part.
That wouldn't be my choice, but it's okay.
Okay, you're missing two.
Two.
So we got Stand Clear the Doors, which is number one. Foolish Mortals is the second.
Do we have...
And Thank the Phoenicians is number three.
Do we have anything from the Carousel of Progress in there? A Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow? Nothing? No, not popular enough?
No, sadly. Apparently that one was in the top 10, though.
Okay. Well, that's something.
I watched that's what they said in the video.
It's in the top 10. Okay. So they guessed that, too. That's funny. Let's see. I'm trying to, like, roll through... are they still?
What is our second favorite ride?
Is it on Space Mountain? Is it Space Mountain ride? Space Mountain, or no?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. One of them is on Space Mountain.
Okay, one is Space Mountain.
I don't remember quotes from Space Mountain. I just remember a lot of...
This one is in Space Mountain.
I know that.
Now I got that sound in my head because that's exactly right. Yeah. A great description yes. of the Space Mountain. Is the other one a Pirates one?
Mm-hmm.
It's Pirates. Okay.
Dead men tell no tales.
That's got to be it because that's the only thing anyone will quote, right? Okay.
That's number five.
Well, what's this?
So number four. I don't know if you're going to get number four.
Well, what is it? Is it Space Mountain?
It's Paging Mr. Morrow. That's
from the People Mover, and that's not even a thing anymore.
Is that People Mover?
And that's not a thing anymore. It's not even there. Although it's fair to quote it.
They don't say it anymore?
No, they haven't said that in years. Yeah, that's not there. That's fine. That's a good quote.
There is someplace else that still quotes it, because I heard it last time
maybe
we were there.
Maybe you have it at the end of Space Mountain now. I don't know, but it's not on the People Mover.
I swear they have it as you're walking. It's when you're going through like the walkway to the stairs to go up.
It could be. That could be.
No, it does. Yeah.
It used to be on the People Mover.
Like the Space Mountain quote that my brother and I used to quote like all the time was in the future people will be traveling through beams of light.
Okay, so that was a thing. I don't remember the quote, but I remember my dad quoting it as we were walking
yes,
up the ride.
That was before they redid it.
Okay. Yep.
Before they redid it, they had like a whole monologue as you went through each scene. And one of the scenes, me and my brother always quoted, in the future, people will be traveling through beams of light.
Yeah. And I'm not saying, I don't remember. There's a portion, I really just remember one phrase from something where somebody's going, just in time for something. I just remember him keep saying, just in time. And I'm like, I don't remember what he was saying before or after that. I just, that part is in here somewhere.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar. I don't remember what was before or after that either, but yeah, I miss the old one going through Space Mountain. That was very nostalgic.
Oh, yeah. No, I love that ride. I love that ride. That was my first roller coaster ever in life.
Aww.
I didn't even know what a roller coaster was. Okay. And I'm getting on this ride. And I was like, I didn't know you could do this.
That's so cute. I love
that. That is great. I love Space Mountain.
That's cute.
My husband doesn't like it as much because it jars his back and it makes me sad. I'm like, sorry, we're still going on it. Or you can just sit out. Like, I got to go on this ride.
Yeah.
This is my Space Mountain.
Have you done it with the lights on?
I have done it with the lights on.
But freaky.
Oh, yeah. It's weird.
I have. It's freaky.
Mm-hmm. It's weird.
It is weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You feel like your head's getting chopped off.
Oh, I felt like that in a normal ride. Like, I could still, I couldn't see it, but I could sense.
You can see the beams, like, yeah.
Well, I could sense it in the dark, but I know I'm short enough that I'm fine.
Yeah.
Logan never felt that way when me and Logan went that one year. He ducked.
Yeah, he scrunched down a bit.
But when the lights were on and I could actually like physically like see the beams, I'm like, oh crap, they're closer than I even thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, love me some nostalgia. I just like those ones. Mm-hmm. There's one I want to do a different day. Like it was the top five or the worst top five and worst five like restaurants. And I just want to go down the list and like see if we
agree. Starlight Cafe. Do you remember the Starlight Cafe? Favorite restaurant ever.
It's a thing. There. They still have him. Yeah. And they still got Sunny there. And, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Actually, parents of a little girl just got in trouble because they let her go up there and try to play with him.
Yeah, you can't do that. Yeah.
You can't. No, because if that thing like lowered, she dead. She done.
Yeah. That's not a smart thing. Don't do that.
No.
Don't do that.
I also... what's his name? Dapper Danielle, which super jealous you got to meet Dapper Danielle.
He's very nice.
I don't like you right
She's
now.
She's super nice.
I'm very jealous of that.
Very, very nice person.
Who's the other one? He's also Dapper.
Oh, the Dapper Manatee, probably.
Yes, Dapper Manatee. I love him.
He's funny.
Sorry. That was, I accidentally hit one of my snack reels I saved. I've been saving snack reels for Disney for my husband because he wants to do all the snacks because we didn't do it last time we were there.
Good thing to do at Disney.
Yeah. Mom and I were talking yesterday. We're like, we know what day we can like reserve our January, February trip. Mm-hmm. So June. So as soon as June hits, I will let you know when I'm coming.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let me know the dates.
I will be in Disney soon.
Yeah.
My coworker's at Disney right now and I'm not happy.
Oh, yeah.
She's on vacation this week coming up and she's in Disney World. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you suck.
Well, if it helps, it's very busy because of Easter and spring break. Yeah, spring break. Yeah. You know.
I know. I just want to be there. I don't need to go on the rides. I don't need to do anything. I just want to walk in, get a coffee, go sit on one of the side tables and just watch people and read. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like I used to do that all the time in college. I'm like, I took it for granted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Someday.
Yeah.
Someday I will be back permanently. Mm-hmm. He's not around. I hear it. He's at work.
Mm-hmm.
But someday. Mm-hmm. But anyways, okay. That was fun. I like.
Yeah.
I just thought like I like their little lists. I don't always agree with them, so I'm like I will give them credit for the list, but me and Sammy need to talk about some of these. Dan, too, if he's eating there. I don't know where you've eaten in Disney, so.
I've probably eaten at several different restaurants. Just the Starlight Cafe is the one that I regularly went to as a kid, so that's the one that stuck in my mind
most. You remember?
Most.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As a kid, before they ruined it, we would have Pecos Bills for lunch because it had normal food. Mm-hmm. And then we would go to Starlight Cafe at the end of the day. We always ended up in Tomorrowland and did Starlight Cafe for dinner.
Is the land still there? The revolving restaurant thing? Is that still there?
Oh, yeah. Garden Grill? Yeah, heck yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. But yeah, that's actually in one of their lists. That's one of the top restaurants.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The land's still there. The land has Soaring. It still has all their food options. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the land.
Yeah, no, it's a great ride. Restaurant.
Restaurant slash ride. I was at work. Yeah. I was at the bookstore the other day, and there's a regular who comes in who's just as obsessed with Disney as we are. Mm-hmm. And so me and her were talking, and then when she walked away, one of my coworkers was like, "Ashley, what is your favorite park?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "Oh, that's a heavy question because if you asked Ashley like 10 years ago, or even like 5 years ago, it would have been
Magic Kingdom. Yeah,
yeah, Magic Kingdom, then Hollywood Studios, then Epcot, then Animal.
Yeah.
Now, after my last trip, Epcot's my favorite to go to. And then Hollywood, then Magic Kingdom, then Animal.
Well, it's so different because we're in such different stages of life. So we're like getting different things out of each park too. At least that's how I look at it.
It is, but it's also the fact that I'm sick of screaming, crying children at Magic Kingdom and their parents being idiots.
We
have that in every park, but Magic Kingdom is the worst now. It's not even magical to me anymore because I'm like, what are you doing? Discipline your child.
Mm-mm.
They should not be here. You should be home napping. Right
exactly.
Now, right?
They never want to take
a
break.
In your hotel room napping.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you don't have to I understand wanting to do everything. Like, I get that. But you have a child under the age of 5.
Yeah, you need to go take a break.
Even under the age of 8. Like, under the age of 10, they need breaks. Mm-hmm. And the price, yes, is heavy. But the price is cheaper than your husband going to a sporting game for, like, 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So if you take 4 hours in the morning, go take a nap, come back for another couple hours, you are going to have more than enough of your money spent.
Mm-hmm. It'll be much more enjoyable.
And people just don't realize that.
Yeah. Now you see a lot of that in theme park culture. It's just like you have people who are from out of town, they spend all this money, and their mindset is we have to squeeze everything in because, you know, this is like the one time a year where we can do a thing like this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they try to fit all that in so much that they get aggravated and their kids get aggravated and then everyone around gets aggravated. It's just, you know, it's not fun for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if you're going to have that mindset, wait till your kids are old enough to have that mindset. Mm-hmm. Like my parents, we didn't do that until middle school.
Yeah.
I think when me and my brother were old enough to like have the stamina and like understanding of like, we didn't need naps. We didn't need any of that stuff. Like we had teenage energy.
Yeah.
So we got to Disney and we started at rope drop and we ended with fireworks and sometimes the extra hours.
Yeah. Teenagers, it's a different era, but it's like, especially you got a bunch of kids. Like you really are herding cats with all their own little personalities, and all their personalities make sure they know what their personality is. And you gotta, They're doing what they want to do. So it's like,
exactly.
You know, you got to either be the bad guy or nothing gets done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Or you get banned from Disney because your kids are doing things they're not supposed to do. Right.
Yes. Also true. Because
they do not give you second chances. Mm-hmm. You do something dumb, you are done.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Apparently someone posted a video recently. I don't know how old the video is, but of someone dropping ashes in Small World.
I can't do that.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, and you're banned. You're done.
Disney done like that.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
No.
No, Disney don't do that. And why would you want your ashes in Small World? Dear Lord, those things are creepy.
Maybe they like dolls. Just saying.
Then you are a psychopath.
Nah, they just read a lot of creepy pasta on Reddit. Or just a lot of creepy pasta.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Apparently the Small World in either like Shanghai or Tokyo is not as creepy as the one in Disney, like Walt Disney World.
I'm not surprised.
I don't know if I believe them, but that's what they say.
No, that's probably true.
No, I believe it. I don't know. It never creeped me out as a kid, but like as an adult, I see why people find it creepy.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't creep me out until I read Kingdom Keepers.
Yeah,
so I kind of blame Ridley Pearson on that one. Mm.
Yeah.
No, yeah, as a kid.
Because they come alive and they're vicious.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, as a kid,
they're not nice.
Yeah, I just remember going through it, just like, it's a slow ride. I'm on the boat and they're just saying things, all those colors and everything. Mm-hmm. And I just remember all the adults in my crew were just kind of groaning about it and like making fun of it.
Yeah. Mm hmm. That's typical.
Okay. Well, we landed on that a lot longer than I meant to. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, that's fun. I'm talking about that.
So let's talk Narnia, which I'm super excited about because, Dan, you were immersed in Narnia as a child, correct? So
you will have
a little bit.
I
thought you said you read the books.
So I had the first book. I had part of the first book read to me as a kid, but I was kind of didn't really have the attention span to follow it. I did watch the parts of like the BBC series that had like the different, you know. But no, I didn't actually read all of the books from beginning to end until COVID.
But you've read them.
No,
you've been immersed in it. Okay. I just got the timeline wrong.
Okay. Yes.
I just got the timeline wrong. Got it.
I'm familiar with them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Okay. Have you watched any of the movies, Sammy, before like we did this?
I feel like I've seen this one before.
Yeah.
And I did reread the book. But as far as I know, the only book I've ever read is the first one. I don't think I read the rest of them.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I have only read this book as well. I have not read any of the other books. And apparently I have the whole set because I was looking for a book in my boxes and all of a sudden I come across a box set of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I'm like,
wow,
I did not know I had this.
Yeah, so if I actually read something you haven't, what is this?
Yeah. That's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to read the, you gotta finish it.
I grabbed it out of the box. Okay, like it's, I so
love these books. Like
I started collecting them like a few years ago. Like I found like, at used bookstores, I would grab like the random ones when I find them. Mm-hmm. So I have like three random ones, like not in order on my shelf, not realizing I already had a box set sitting in a box.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah.
So I already have them.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So, you know, yeah, I need to read them. I have so many things I'm reading right now.
I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Sorry.
You're good. Okay, so we are talking Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe today. Mm-hmm. There was a movie in 2000-something, and this book was published. You know what? I didn't get any of that information.
No? The book was a long time ago.
1950. Yeah. Sorry, yes, I did get that information. C.S. Lewis wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, published in 1950. Movie came out in 2005. So we are going to talk both of these. Now, I am going to warn our listeners because this book, this series is very heavy in the Christian religion. And I am going to talk about that because I feel like it is important to the book And it would be a disservice to the book and the author if I didn't bring up some of the themes that he's trying to convey. Yeah. I'm not preaching. I don't want you guys to think as listeners that I'm trying to force this upon you. I am just relaying to you it was meant. And I just want to give that disclaimer so you don't think I'm, you know, trying to force my religion on you, because that is not what I do and not what I ever want to do. There's my disclaimer to our listeners.
Unless I actually burst into flames, I think you'll be fine.
Well, I just, you know, listeners, like if there's a listener who's listening and all of a sudden they're maybe like agnostic or atheist, and they're like, I don't want to hear this. I want them to know what it's coming.
If you read the book, I mean, it's like in your face. I mean, it's not subtle.
It is. So, but again, yeah, in this world of social media, I'm just putting a disclaimer on before we talk about it.
Sure.
I'm covering my butt.
No, the first one, it's definitely not subtle. It's subtle for the rest of the books, which is interesting, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've heard the books are a little bit more nuanced, that you kind of got to know the scriptures to kind of know where he's going with it.
A lot more nuanced, but also, I mean, it's a lot more like he took a lot of inspiration from parts of the Bible and characters in the Bible and just influenced them in the world of Narnia and just let Narnia sort of grow into its own thing, but still very like influenced by that.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I remember as the movies came out, I'm like, oh, the first one is like,
no, it's pretty,
you dipped it. Like, this is the gospel right here. This is the gospel. But the second movie and the third movie, I'm like, I don't see the theme very well, but I don't see what the Christian theme as much.
Yeah.
But it's there. Yeah, it's
like the overall theme that I got, at least we'll get to there, but back in the second movie, was just like the importance of just quiet, elegant faith, and that's just kind of like leading with that as opposed to being a zealot, and you know, that's sort of the approach to that.
Let's dive in. So anyway. They gave me a huge summary for the book, and it does have spoilers, but it came out in 1950. If you don't know about the Narnia, then go away and come back later. During World War II, four siblings, Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy, are sent to the countryside to stay with an old professor. While exploring the house, Lucy discovers a wardrobe that leads to a magical land of Narnia, a world trapped in endless winter under the rule of the White Witch. Lucy befriends Mr. Tumnus, a faun who initially plans to betray her, but ultimately helps her return home. When Lucy tells her siblings, they don't believe her, until Edmund also enters Narnia. There, he meets the White Witch, who tempts him with power and enchanted Turkish delight. I've always wanted to know what Turkish delight is, and I want to still try it. I need to find this somewhere. But anyway, side note. Convincing him to betray his siblings. Eventually, all four children enter Narnia together and learn that they are part of a prophecy. Two sons of Adam and two daughters of Eve will defeat the witch. They meet allies like the beavers and journey to find Aslan, the great lion and true ruler of Narnia. Edmund secretly leaves to join the witch, but she turns on him. Aslan rescues Edmund to save him from the witch's claim due to his betrayal. Aslan sacrifices himself in Edmund's place. He is killed on the stone table, but later resurrected through deeper magic. In the final battle, Peter leads Aslan's forces against the witch. Aslan returns, defeats her, and restores peace. The children are crowned kings and queens of Narnia and rule for many years until one day they stumble back through the wardrobe and return to England as children again with no time half passing. I'm not going to lie. If I've all of a sudden become an adult and then you push me through the back of the wardrobe and I'm a child again, I'll be pissed.
I was never really able to totally reconcile that. It's like, man, living this whole life, you become adults, you do all these adventures, and now then you got to go through adolescence again.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And now I'm back in World War II.
Exactly.
I have no more like fantasy world. Like, I was living in my fantasy world. Let me go back.
Yeah. I would shock it up to like they experience it the way we would like wake up from a really vivid dream. It's like, okay, we're back in the real world. But like, man, I wish I could go back to that dream.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very detailed dream where all four of them remembered what happened.
Right.
So some quick differences between the book and the movie. The book is more streamlined, symbolic, and focused on a moral journey. The movie adds emotional depth, action, and character tension, especially around Edmund and the war backdrop. So they really, from what I understand, the movie really expanded the book. I need to reread the book. Really expanded the book from what it was. Because ChatGPT gave me the overall vibe. Mm-hmm. I hate that word. But the book is more of like a simple fairy tale tone. Narrator speaks directly to the reader. There's more symbolism and allegory with the Christian themes. The movie makes it more epic. Action-heavy fantasy, deeper emotional realism, especially trauma, war, and sibling conflict, and then expands world building and stakes.
Yeah.
So those are our biggest ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely captures the spirit of the book, but it makes it more accessible to people who like don't take their time to read fairy tales from the 50s.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So there are some like comparison, like some similarities and differences between the book characters and the movie characters. So you got the four children, Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy. That's their order of age. Peter's the oldest, then Susan, Edmund, Lucy. Peter in the book, he's noble, more like a storybook hero. In the movie, he's more conflicted. He struggles with leadership and self-doubt. Susan, she's more practical, cautious, and slightly skeptical in the book. In the movie, she's more mature, protective, and there's a lot of tension with Peter added with their rivalry of being older. Edmund in the book, he's clearly tempted to betray, and then he is redeemed. They take that nuance and they really expand it in the movie. It's more layered. He's resentful, isolated, emotionally complex, and his betrayal feels more psychologically grounded in the movie than in the book. And then you got Lucy. Oh, little Lucy. In the book, she's pure, innocent, unwavering faith. And honestly, in the movie, she has the same core traits, just more emotional depth in it than I guess the book. But the book's very thin. Like, they kind of had to expand on it. So that's why we're seeing more nuance. And then you got, of course, your supporting characters as Aslan. He's majestic, symbolic, and actually more distant in the book. In the movie, he's more screen time, he's a war leader, and he has a more of emotional presence. The White Witch in the book, she's cold, evil, and very much an archetypal villain. In the movie, more active and intimidating, physically actually fights in the battles. I guess in the book she did not. And then you got Tumnus. Oh, Mr. Tumnus. In the book, he's gentle and he's very conflicted. And same in the movie, just they expanded it a little bit more. So some of the biggest plot differences. The opening sequence in the book, the children start, it starts with the children going to the countryside, where in the movie they add like World War II bombings of London to kind of give that grounding, historical grounding and emotional weight. Edmund's betrayal in the book, he's mainly tempted by Turgis' delights and promises, where in the movie he's more mad at his siblings and his insecurity, and that's what kind of motivates him. Which really irked me because I'm very much about like being loyal to my family. And then when Edmund did that in the movie, I'm like, oh, I want to punch him. The witch's presence, she's less frequent in the book, and she's more involved in the movie actually hunting down the children, which is, I guess, it definitely added to the epicness of like running away from your enemies. Actions and battles were a little different. The book, the final battle is very brief and not very detailed. The movie, literally, this is how they gave it to me. Full-scale Lord of the Rings style battle with choreography and stakes. Are not wrong.
Because that was like right after the last, or like a couple years after the last The Return of the King came out. So it's like they're really capitalizing off the visual aspect of it has to look like this.
Right, yeah.
Wait, when did The Return of the King come out?
03, I believe.
Yeah, it was 03.
Yeah, so that makes sense. It influenced this.
I kind of forget that was that long ago because they still hold up really well.
They really do.
They do. I'm so torn. I want to read the rest of my book today, but now I want to watch Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. I like them more today than I did back then. They've grown on me with time. And not that I didn't like them, but I've grown to appreciate them much more.
Yeah, I didn't really appreciate them more until college. Who was it? Me and not Maria. Maria's sister. Who is her younger sister? What the? You probably don't even remember. Remember Disney Maria, Sammy? Yeah. who I went, okay, her younger sister, I can't remember her name, but we were friends. That's bad. I don't remember my friend's name. And she and I did a full day, like from beginning to end, extended versions of Lord of the Rings in one Saturday. Neither of us had homework, and like whole day watched in the in our dorm room. Mm-hmm. That's pretty great. It was fantastic. Wow. After that, watching the whole thing through, I'm like, I love him. Now, Fellowship's not my favorite.
Really?
Two Towers is my favorite. Mm-hmm. And I will admit that when I'm watching him by myself, I skip all the Frodo scenes. I can't stand Frodo. I'm sorry. He's so whiny. I don't like him. Yeah. But anyways, we're not talking about that today. That would be fun. That would be a fun three episodes.
Yeah, we'll have to do a Lord of the Rings episode sometime.
No, mm-mm. I'm not watching that.
We're not.
Those are so long. This is hard enough to commit to.
Not if you do the regular version.
Oh, good Lord. I'm not going to promise I would watch it. I'm not going to promise I would watch
it. You don't have to watch it. I think that would be me. That could be more of a me and Dan. Mm-hmm.
You can have it.
anyways, Aslan's death and resurrection, the book, it was deeply symbolic, somewhat understated. In the movie, they made it more emotional, visual, and intense. Closer focus on Lucy and Susan during that time. Susan kind of reminds me of, for my ones who do know the Bible, Doubting Thomas, one of the disciples. That's who she reminds me of, because she kind of doesn't believe anything until she sees it, sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. If I know her story, even though I haven't read the books, I know how her story ends in Narnia. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you seem very much like a Doubting Thomas.
Mm.
Ending the book was a quick resolution and return to to England. The movie, they drew it out. We got to see them turn into adults. We got to see them kind of adventuring. And all of a sudden they see this lamppost that they are like, wait a second, we know this. Mm-hmm. What is this? Anybody remember? And then Lucy's like, wait. And like they run. I'm like, why do you follow Lucy? Now you're kids again in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Good gravy. So in the movie, so you know who played them, Edmund was played by Skander Keynes. I don't know. But his name's Skander. Lucy was played by Georgie Henley. Peter was played by William Moseley. And then Susan was played by Anna Popplewell. Is that how you say her name?
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The voice of Aslan was, of course, Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's only like a couple people. Huh?
Who else could do that role?
No one. Perfection.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a couple voices in my head that I'm like, there's certain voices that could play like the voice of God, and Liam Neeson is one
mm-hmm.
of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other one is, what was it, James Earl Jones, and who's the other one who has played God? Morgan Freeman.
Well, Morgan Freeman, yeah, he's already been God, so.
Yeah.
I know, but he, like, when I heard him in the movie for the first time, I'm like, that is honestly the depth of the voice that I would think God would sound like if he talked to me right now.
Yeah.
It made sense.
I don't remember this man's name, but there was a professor back at SEU who always stuck with me. He'd been in a way that he believed that God was talking to him. He was like, if God's upset with me, to me, I imagine him sounding like James Earl Jones. But if he's pleased with me, I imagine him sounding like Morgan Freeman.
Oh, okay.
Was it a religious professor?
Yes, I'm pretty sure. He was a younger guy, and he didn't really show
younger
up until,
guy?
Yeah, he didn't really show up until like the last 2 years we were there.
Oh, what was his name?
You know what I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about. I see his face in my head, but because it wasn't Davis, it wasn't Waddle.
Definitely not.
It wasn't Hackett. Yeah. Dear Lord, Hackett. I remember there was
years.
A younger new professor, but I don't remember his name. And I had what's his face for who taught not Old Testament Survey, because that was a female professor. New Testament Survey.
Matt Hewitt. It wasn't Hewitt who said that.
I know, but I was trying to remember his name.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't him, but Hewitt. Those were two very different classes and very different professors.
It was definitely an interesting time.
Yes. I'm not going to lie, I liked Old Testament Survey better, but that's my own thing. Well, Old Testament, I'd rather read the Old Testament because it's more story-based, and that's what I like.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, sometimes I don't like Paul. Sometimes I cannot sit there and read Paul's letters because he yells at me and I don't want to deal with him
moment. Yeah, he makes you feel some kind of way. He's like the... No, never mind.
Anywho, and then you got...
I would stir up things and I'm not... Yeah, we're not that kind of... Mm-hmm. We're not that kind of podcast.
Yeah, we don't need to go there. Mm-hmm. The White Witch was played by Tilda Swinton, mm-hmm. and
I good loved her in this movie.
God, oh, she was amazing. She's so scary. Good.
She's so like, I love that there's nothing actually scary about her in the beginning, but you just feel so unsettled by her. Mm-hmm. And I like, she's yes. so good at that type of role. Mm-hmm.
Yes, because she does the same thing in which Marvel movie is it?
Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. I don't like
Tilda's
you.
Tilda's always good at that.
She's so good.
Oh my gosh, she's amazing at that. Mm-hmm. And then you got Mr. Tumnus, played by James
McAvoy.
McAvoy. I'm like, wait, I'm saying this wrong.
He's Charles Xavier to mm-hmm. me.
Yes. Well, he the first time, this was my first experience with James McAvoy, mm-hmm. and then he was in a movie called Penelope,
okay,
which is mm-hmm. like this like fantasy kind of romance, and I love it because mm-hmm. he's adorable. Okay. James McAvoy is adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember having a huge crush on him, even as I saw him as a Fawn. I'm like, you are very attractive as a Fawn, and I don't know why I'm attracted to this. Right,
I get it.
Oh, it's funny.
I get it. He is a very, he's a handsome guy. Mm-hmm. He has that kind of like approachable puppy dog kind mm-hmm. of vibe.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also like suave.
Yes, very much so. The movie was directed by Andrew Adamson. He also directed Shrek, interestingly.
Nice.
I don't know how those correlate, but you know, he has range. He pushed for practical effects. Thank you. Real locations in New Zealand, just like Lord of the Rings, which makes sense because C.S. Lewis and Tolkien were around the same time and they, one influenced the other in some way, not positively, like one didn't like the other. I think it was Tolkien didn't like Lewis and he wanted his to be completely different than, I don't know. But yeah, there was some sort of weird thing going on.
An interesting relationship. Like, I don't know, ultimately friends, but there was definitely like a...
There was a rivalry.
They had very different approaches. Yeah. Like, Lewis was very, like, straight up, this is what it is. Tolkien was like, let's be a little more subtle about it. Like, his focus was more on just the story itself, influenced by his, because I think he was Catholic, right? So a lot of
he was Catholic.
Yeah. So it was like, I remember reading something about how he approached it. Like, I don't remember how he worded it. It was something about, like, you know, my beliefs are what they are, and the fragments of them are going to come out regardless, but I don't focus on that. I focus on the story I want to tell. Whereas Lewis, he's like, no, this is this. And it's very, it's different approaches.
Right.
Well, and Lewis was very much a, like, Christian author. Right. Like, he has many nonfiction Christian works that a lot of colleges still use today. Yeah. Mere Christianity is one of them.
The Space Trilogy. Like, he wrote that. I believe he was technically still an atheist when he wrote that. But a lot of the themes were very, like, asking those type of moral dilemma questions. Especially the second one. The second one is called Perelandra. And I don't know if you've ever read it, but you would find it really interesting.
I have only read Mere Christianity because I had to for one of our classes. Okay.
Space Trilogy is a little slower, but it's definitely, it's still very much C.S. Lewis. It's still very much his writing style. But the second movie, basically, he goes to, I think, Venus or something, which is basically like a second Earth. So he goes through the whole creation story of like the fall of man, and he has an opportunity to like stop it. So it's like another Adam, another Eve, and he's tempted by another Satan or whatever. So it sort of delves into like the apologetics of it and like the moral. I think you'd really appreciate it. It's really interesting.
Interesting. I'll look into that. We have a lot of C.S. Lewis books at my bookstore, so I'll check that out. Yeah. The team did use a mix of CGI for Aslan and the creatures because I mean, come on, kind of have to. There were some animatronics and costumes and prosthetics. What'd you say?
You can't tell a lion.
Yeah, just have a lion walking around with children.
That was a pretty big lion.
It was a very big lion.
Let's see here. Tilda brought a cold, regal, and almost alien energy, very intentional to make her feel inhuman, which, again, we all agree she did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Liam gave the character a powerful, authoritative voice that added emotional weight. Mm. Again, agreed. And the filmmaker intentionally leaned into the epic fantasy trend post Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. which
right.
Dan mentioned already. Big themes, good versus evil. That's classic in any sort of kind of movie nowadays, especially like from the, if we're going off of a book from the 50s. There's redemption as a big theme, sacrifice, because Aslan is a Christ figure, and then faith and belief, which is like Lucy's role. Mm-hmm. She had very strong faith and belief in what was happening mm-hmm. and that everything would be okay. Mm-hmm. Some differences in the themes. The book was more Christian allegory, more moral lessons, fell more told than kind of had to figure out. Mm. Whereas the movie added themes such as war and trauma, family dynamics, leadership under pressure, and then the allegory is still there, but more subtle and emotional than instructional. Mm-hmm. I liked what they added. I liked the adding that war and trauma, the family dynamics, mm-hmm. and then the leadership, I mean, is whatever when it comes to, I feel like that should be in war and trauma. But those things were going on in their story. Right. So it's kind of nice that they kind of added that in, mm-hmm. For it. Mm-hmm. I really don't have anything bad to say about the book or the movie. Yeah. unlike Percy Jackson mm-hmm. movies. Right. Some tone and storytelling differences. The book feels more like a bedtime story, mm-hmm. much faster paced, more imagination driven. The movie, epic journey, more slower, cinematic pacing, focus on realism and spectacle. Mm-hmm. And then, the biggest difference in one line, we kind of already said fairy tale, epic fantasy versus epic fantasy drama. Now, I do want to get into a little bit of what this book, like the symbolism in it, because I think it is important in the storytelling that this is very much it is the retelling of the gospel mm-hmm. story. Mm-hmm. And for you, anybody listening out there who doesn't know what the gospel story is, oddly enough, it's happening right now this weekend that we All right. are filming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is the weekend. So I thought that was interesting that we are filming mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. the weekend that Easter is happening. Yeah. This is the gospel story. This is Aslan is the equivalent of Jesus Christ. And Edmund and his siblings are us humans. And Edmund, just like us humans, sin and betray in the Christian faith. That's part, like, something that we do. We kind of walk away from God sometimes. We betray our family. We betray the good morals. And he walked into what is known in the Christian faith as, like, sin with the devil or Satan or Lucifer, whatever you want to call him. He has many, many names. Many, many names.
Beast with many names.
In the story, there's this what's called deep magic, and that because Edmund chose to betray, he is now like property of the White Witch or the Satan character. And the only way to save him, the only way to give him any sort of redemption, is for someone to take his place. And that is what Aslan does mm-hmm. as Jesus Christ. Because if you know the gospel story, that's what Jesus Christ is in the Christian faith, is we believe that to save us from our sins so we can live a pure life after death in heaven, Jesus Christ had to sacrifice himself to take on all the sin in the world. And that's what Aslan does in this story, is that he sacrifices himself so that way Edmund can be with his family and not die. But because he sacrificed himself, it gives the deep magic a reason to resurrect him. And that's what happened with Jesus Christ. He was resurrected 3 days later. And they didn't do a 3-day thing here, I don't believe. I think it was literally like a next day sort of deal.
Yeah.
But it covers kind of that. That's the storyline that C.S. Lewis wanted. He wanted to present the gospel in a fairy tale setting for children, to kind of help them see it in a different light mm-hmm. is what I kind of get it from. Mm-hmm. And I love how he did it, because I think that fantasy stories, fairy tales, are great, great morals, places to teach children things. And I feel like the way he presented this was more loving than sometimes what we see the gospel is presented as. Like, it is all about love. It is all about doing good and having living your life to the fullest and not giving in to the evils of the world. And I feel like he did a very good job of doing that. And I feel like a lot of when we have those types of themes for kids, it's easier to wrap their head around when it's a fairy tale. I mean, if you look at our Disney movies, mm-hmm. like all of our Disney movies from 1937 mm-hmm. to probably about the Renaissance time. I don't know about now, but up until the Renaissance time, were very much like fairy tales for moral lessons mm-hmm. about good versus evil or redemption. Aladdin had redemption or whatever theme you were looking at. So I love it. I love how they represented it. If I had kids, this is how I would probably mm-hmm. introduce that story to them, because it's presented so well for the Christianity faith mm-hmm. To give them a chance to start to kind of break it down themselves and see if it's something they want to believe
mm-hmm.
or if they want to go a different route.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you could probably, like, if you step back away from the Christianity faith and look at some of the other religions out there, you could probably also find their themes somewhat in this story as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is my guess.
Yeah.
Which that's what I love about stories. Mm-hmm. It can cross many different mm-hmm. religions, mm-hmm. many different thought processes.
Right. Well, one thing I always appreciate about Lewis is like he had a way of taking like really just ideas and concepts and like making them into like an actual what this would look like in a story scenario. Like sacrifice, for example, like that is a mm-hmm. definition of sacrifice. Or it's been a long time since I read the books, but he had this way of taking things that you don't really think about what you feel and then making them into solid things that you can like, oh yeah, this represents what this feels like. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of those themes in The Language and the World, but then in the other books that come out later on.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, he was real good about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about the movie. What are you guys' thoughts on just the movie in general? Like favorite things you wish they did differently, anything of that nature? Sammy, did you watch it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I watched it. I mean, I think it's a good movie. It follows mm-hmm. the book relatively well, but. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the changes they made, I do feel like it would have been a lot to like spend a chunk of the movie just watching them walking through the woods for hours on end. So I understood. Yeah, I understood why we had to switch some of that up, because visually it would mm-hmm. have been like, okay, are they still walking mm-hmm. through the woods? Like, all right. You know, in the book, you could tolerate it a little bit more. But yeah, so I understand why they made some of the changes and did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, you know, like in the book when Father Christmas shows up, they're all mm-hmm. still hiding in the little cave or whatever when they hear him. But I kind of like in this one, they switched it up. So he's like behind them and they all think it's the White Witch and they're all running. And then it turns out, no, it's just Santa.
mm-hmm. I love that Santa is even in this. I love that he included him. I'm like, thank you. I know like he's not really in the Christian faith, but mm-hmm. I love it that you've added him in because I think he's important.
Yeah,
it's an important symbol.
It's a symbol and archetype of just joy and hope and benevolence mm-hmm. and
just the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. It's an interesting choice, but it weirdly worked. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. yeah. No, I agree. It's nice that they did still include him in the movie too. So mm-hmm. I'm glad they did that. A little bit different from the book, but.
Yeah, it was also a pivotal moment too, because up until then, that had been an ongoing thing they've been talking about. It's
never
it's
got to Christmas.
Winter, but never Christmas. Exactly, it's always winter, never Christmas. And then, like now, the White Witch, her grip is weakening, and
that's the first sign.
Here comes, you know, Daddy Christmas, Father Christmas, and so mm-hmm. it's like it's a promise of hope.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a lot of what I get out of these books, is just, especially, you know, really thinking about the time that it was written in. I mean, it really was written from a guy who lived in post-war, or through World War II. They both were.
Lived through World War II. He might have lived through World War One too. Yeah.
Depends how old he was, I guess, when he wrote this.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so it came out after World War II.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he actually was like.
But he was born in 1898, he lived through World War One and World War Two.
Yeah, so like he's seen some stuff. Like he had been through a whole world. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's, you know, looking at that, it's like, man, you know, like, I mean, people living back then, they didn't know that they were, you know, as far as they were concerned, this was just going to be how it was. Like, it was just going to go on forever. So
You don't know.
You know, we don't know. They didn't know it was going to last for this long. So it's like, you know, you live in this world that's just so much harsh reality for so long, and you don't see any kind of hope. And then all of a sudden, you're in a world where that's over. It's like a desperate need for hope. And then you write about that feeling of hope. It really gave me a deeper appreciation for the books, knowing the life of the person that it was like who wrote that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm glad they added that at the beginning of the movie because, I mean, it's a kid's book, so we don't necessarily need to emphasize the bombs and all that, but it was nice in the movie to kind of emphasize why they had to leave, like what the danger was and what these kids are dealing with, to make Narnia seem even more important to them.
Yeah. Also, anybody think it was weird how they show up at this place and the house of this professor who's like supposed to be their guardian, and then his mate is like, don't bother the professor. It's like, come on in my house, I'm going to protect you and, you know, take care of you, so because you're not going to go, but if you dare come into my office and bother me.
Exactly. Okay. So, what a shift.
Goodness.
But also, like, you know, it's typical young adult, you know, situations, like, don't do the thing. All right, here, I'm going to go do the thing. Don't go rummaging around the house and bother the professor. Hey, guys, you want to rummage around the house and bother the professor?
Yep, let's just go through all of his things in the house.
Yeah.
Oh. So I looked it up. So J.R.R. Tolkien was only born a couple years before Lewis.
Yeah, okay.
And so they both went through both world wars. Mm-hmm. So you can definitely see, like, especially in Tolkien, you can definitely see the war. But they both were World War One soldiers. They both fought in World War One. Tolkien was actually like on the line, on the front lines. Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis had said that he volunteered as a teenage soldier because he was only 19. Mm-hmm. And he was in France, front lines in France on his 19th birthday in 1917.
Wow.
He was a second lieutenant in the Somerset Light Infantry.
Wow.
He experienced trench warfare and was wounded in 1918.
Wow.
Can't even imagine that.
Yeah.
Can't imagine.
So it's almost like Tolkien needed to work through what he experienced in the war through Lord of the Rings.
Right.
And Lewis was like, I'm not going to show children that. Mm-hmm. Children don't need to know about what I experienced. Mm-hmm. We're going to do shorter fairy tales and kind of hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, very different approaches.
Hell yeah.
Very different people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like why, you know, one had to flesh out the trauma, the other one had to, you know, live in a world where there was hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if C.S. Lewis kind of maybe bent into his faith a little bit more than maybe Tolkien did.
Oh, that was
when it came to
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. But the movie, speaking of the movie, going back to the movie, The Witch, it was so jarring to see her in, like, when the snow was gone. Like, for some reason, like, yes, she was unsettling with winter and, like, seeing her in her white dress and her white stuff. But I remember seeing her coming, like, into the battlefield and there's no snow. She's in, like, this horribly drab, and it just felt like so off. I don't know about you guys, but
she had like the fake mane on, like she's trying to emulate.
Yes, she had, because she cut his mane off.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, oh dear lord.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because that battle almost kind of felt very, good gravy. What's the word I'm looking for?
Apocalyptic.
Yes, but it's the word in Revelation, like the final battle. There's a word for, there's a title for it. I don't know, but it felt very final battle, like in Revelation. I was trying to think of the book of the Bible, dear Lord, Ashley. Yeah. It felt very Revelation when she like was coming up and like they were doing the final thing and he killed her. I'm like, oh, okay. We're just skipping to Revelation. Got it. Got it. Very different.
So much I want to say about that, but you haven't read all the books, but there's the very last book of the Narnia series.
I mean, I know kind of what happens throughout the books. I know how it ends. I know what happens to the Pevensey children. Like, just say it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Like, when you're talking about, like, the taking from the book of the Narnia, like, the very literal, the last battle, it goes, I mean, we're talking about, like, relating things in the line of which in the wardrobe to the message of the New Testament Gospels. You can take the same thing in the last battle and take a lot of messages from the New Testament book of Revelation where, you know, the righteous and the wicked are divided up to one side or another. And do you know anything about that specifically? Or like what? Because that actually happens.
With what happens with the children? Yes, I know exactly what happens.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I'm trying to remember. It's like, so basically, there's a big battle that happens and there's like this monkey who sees like a lion carcass and he basically takes the carcass and puts it on a goat and like convinces everyone that that's Aslan. So it's like a sort of antichrist kind of story.
Yep.
Turns out he's just this manipulative buffoon or whatever. Eventually Aslan does show up, but by then most of the people are just so embittered by this deception that they don't believe it's the real Aslan. So then there's a whole apocalypse thing that happens and they all die and go to heaven or the next world or what have you, and Aslan basically just kind of lines them all up, and like on one side you have all the people who like their eyes were open and they saw it, they recognized Aslan and they met him with joy and awe and wonder, and some were afraid of him, but you know, there's genuine humility. And then the other people, the other half who saw him, were met with like rage and anger and hate and whatever, and those people were basically just cast off into just the abyss or whatever, you know, they're just never going to be heard from
separation
again. Right, yeah. And then the next group is sort of welcomed into like heaven or what have you.
The Narnia heaven.
Yeah. But yeah, again, it's interesting how it starts with the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, with those archetypes, which most people are familiar with, but not as many people are familiar with the archetypes of the End Times book. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting seeing that written in the Narnia world too. So I know there's a lot more that went on in that, but yeah, you gotta get there. You gotta read them. If you ever read them, we gotta do an episode on them and just, you know, I think I'd really be interested to see kind of your reaction to those books.
Yeah, well, and the story ending, the last battle, I don't know as much about, but I knew what you were talking about. Like, I remember all of that from when I kind of researched it. But what saddens me and what scares me is, I don't really want to read how the kids get separated and how we lose three of them and the one stays. And like that is very much like, feels very also apocalyptic revelation of like what is it, Dan? People, good gravy. I need to reread Revelation. When we get taken, when the concept of us being taken into heaven with and other people staying down.
You can say it.
No, I can't remember the name.
I know what it is. I just want to make you say it.
I don't... Hold on.
Starts with an R.
I know, but I keep wanting to say resurrection, and that's not right.
It sounds like a dinosaur.
That's a good dinosaur.
Rapture! Dear freaking Lord.
It does sound like a dinosaur.
It does sound like a dinosaur. When I learned about what happened with like the kids and Susan being left behind after they died in the car, I'm like, wow, that feels very rapturous. Like,
John Nelson
because
Barbie.
She, huh? Mm.
could go on a rant about that. John Nelson Darby, who's the kind of the guy who popularized that in the 1800s. But
oh, I know. There's multiple,
Nelson Darby.
And during my master's ministry, I had to learn all the different nuances of where the rapture comes from, who started, who kind of came up with that concept, what their other concepts are. One of my pastors doesn't believe in the rapture. He believes that we're already. That's again, not this.
Kurt Cameron.
Oh God. Don't get me started on those movies.
I'm not a fan of Cameron. I'm a fan of all the, airplanes crashing and, people,
I am not a fan of Left Behind. That gave me multiple nightmares and multiple Saturdays where I woke up thinking my parents were gone. Listen. And I was left behind.
Listen.
Literally.
Yeah, you think
trauma.
You think I would have that trauma, but see, I sat through a little stage play called Heaven's Gates and Hell's Flames. Okay, you know I adopted the trauma. I was born in it, molded by it. I didn't see the trauma until I was already a man. By then, it was nothing to me but stories. I saw people be dragged into hell at 10 years old by a 35-year-old dude dressed like Darth Maul. I didn't see the light until I was already a man. By then, it was nothing to me but blinding.
Okay.
Anyway.
Wow. I thought my church was bad. Dear Lord. My church growing up was...
nightmares. Things you can't even talk about. Things you can't even see.
Well, I'm not going to lie. Darth Maul always kind of came off to me as a devilish type character. Mm-hmm. He scared the crap out of me when I first watched that movie as a kid. Mid-teenager or something. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why is the devil on my movie screen for Star Wars? But anywho.
Yeah.
This has been a heavy episode. I don't know how to end this because we kind of... It's very heavy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I enjoy rewatching these, honestly.
No, I love these movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love this movie. I like the second movie.
It's the opposite. The second movie was mad. The third movie was better. The second one was really just set up for the next several movies that were supposed to come after that. Because you meet Prince Caspian, and then he's kind of like an ongoing figure throughout the rest of them. And the second one was like, okay, I get it, but it's a lot of to me, it's just a lot of. We're going to a place, a lot of waiting, a lot of walking, a lot of,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it great. And then just kind of goes like this for me for the rest of the movies they gave us.
Yeah.
Ben Barnes is in them and I love me some Ben Barnes. So my first interaction was Ben Barnes was the next movie we're going to talk about. But they did it wrong. Like, he was supposed to be, 12.
Okay.
Not a teenager.
Yes, he was a lot younger in the books. Forget about that.
He was a lot younger in the books because there was no love story between him and Susan like there is in the movie. So we get to talk about that fun next week.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no.
All right. Well.
Huh? Oh, no. They never got to my favorite movie / book, which is The Silver Chair, but they never made that. And that was always one of my favorite stories.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Disney took it over, and Disney just... If it was, honestly, if we are going to do Narnia right, I feel like it needs to be you need to have a cast who understands and will respect the Christian lore that C.S. Lewis put in it, but not overwhelm us with it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I feel like we lost that when Disney took it.
Well, we'll do that.
For the second and third movie. Yeah. Or the third movie, whichever
Disney
movie
did
it
the
was.
First one, too.
Wait, not Disney. Who took it over after Disney?
I don't know. It was always Disney.
No.
Well, no, I think you're right, because only the second one had the Disney logo at the beginning of it. I don't think the first one did.
The first one did.
Okay, the first one, the first and the second one are with Disney and Walden Media. Fox took it over. That's when it went down. Okay. When Fox took it over for the third one.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
I was not happy.
It did have a bit of a different vibe. I know that. I know. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I still enjoyed it.
But. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. Folks, I hope you enjoyed us talking about The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Next week, we're going to be visiting Prince Caspian and getting to talk about Mr. Ben Barnes. Yay. He's a singer. Did you know that? He has a beautiful voice. But anyways, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week, and we will see you next week for Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian. Mm-hmm. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Pixie Dust Twins podcast featuring Dan. The show is written and produced by Ashley and Sammy, except for those manifestos, which are all written by Dan himself. Intro and audio editing by Sammy, logo created by Ashley. The show is produced as part of the Limitless Broadcasting Network. Make sure you check out all of our other shows and have a magical day.
Calling all you horror enthusiasts. If you are brave enough, we dare you to listen to our horror podcast, You Can't Kill the Boogeyman Podcast, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by Limitless Broadcasting Network. This show is available wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, everyone is entitled to one good scare. Don't forget to subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.